This is the Bookmark Podcast from Scottish Book Trust. If you love books and reading, connect with us at scottishbooktrust.com, on Facebook, and on Twitter.
Hi everybody, welcome to Bookmark. This is our Book Week Scotland podcast in which we share with you some of the events and the people involved in making Book Week Scotland 2012 happen from November 26th till December 2nd. And we've got on this podcast a huge episode. We've got Alexander McCall Smith reading to us from My Favorite Place, the free book that the Scottish Book Trust put out all over the country. They were on ferries and in cafes and bookshops and everywhere you could possibly imagine. Hopefully you got your copy or you'll be able to find one now. We've got Frank Coulter Boyce, the author of the Chitty Chitty Bang Bang series, as well as the screenwriter of numerous films, including 24 Hour Party People. We get to hear about the other events that were happening throughout Scotland, including the book sculpture treasure hunt, where five lucky and fast people found the book sculptures and got to take home a little trophy. It was an amazing adventure. Hopefully you played along. And we've even got a Chinese poem translated into Scots. It's a jam-packed episode, and we're thrilled to be sharing it with you. On the 30th of November at 11 a.m., people throughout Scotland were encouraged to put down their mobile phones, close their laptops, turn off all of their screens, and sit and read a book for 1 hour. What did you read? Hopefully you took the time to get lost in a bit of a book. We were read to by Alexander McCall Smith at the National Museum of Scotland, and we sat down with him for a little chat afterwards.
Hello, I'm Alexander McCall Smith, and I'm participating in Book Week Scotland. The Book Trust, Scottish Book Trust, has just published a book called My Favourite Place, a tribute to Scotland's best loved places, in which various people, including a number of authors, were invited to write about a place in Scotland that is particularly important for them. I chose a place that I spend a lot of time in, a watery place at the top end of the Sound of Mull. The sound begins where Morven turns a corner into Loch Linnhe. To the south of that point is Lismore, and beyond that Oban and the islands that cluster about it. That is the route to Jura and Islay, but we were looking north now, making our way past Loch Allyn and the ruins of our Tornish castle, up past Funery to Drimnin on the Morven shores and Tobermory on the Mull side. Now we're in the patch of water that I love to cross in my gaff-rigged cutter, either under sail or with the diesel engine thumping away down below. More often it is with the engine on, as the winds here can be eccentric and unreliable, funneled or blocked by various mountains that have little sympathy for the needs of the sailor. It's a place of blues and silvers, and occasional golds. The sea has many moods. At times it may be flat, calm and milky, untroubled by even the slightest breeze. In such conditions, the surface will speak to what lies below. Sudden stirrings will occur as shoals of tiny fish seek to escape voracious mackerel, attracting the attention of mewing gulls or diving birds. Or there may be the slick, black shape of a porpoise, darting, cavorting, cutting through the water like a small torpedo. At other times, especially when the tide is draining down the sound and meets a strong wind blowing the other way, it's a place of turbulence and liquid excitement. White horses top steel-grey waves, and as the wind picks up, foam may be whipped across the surface of the sea. Up at the top end of the sound, from a point to the west of the rocks known as the Stirks, you can look up towards Ardnamurchan Head, or across the stretch of water that lies between the mainland and the islands, and see on the horizon the smudge of land that is coal. In a reasonably fast boat, the time taken to make the crossing is a couple of hours at the most. Once there, you can anchor around the cairns of coal and step off onto a beach of brilliant white. At the edge of the beaches, there's that mixture of grass and flowers that is common on these lovely islands. Purple and yellow flowers dot the grass, on which here and there one finds a fragment of white shell, a tuft of wool from a black-faced sheep, a feather from a seabird, some bleached sticks thrown up by the waves. In good weather, once you've turned the corner round Ardnamurchan Head, you look up to Muck, to Rum, to Egg, with Skye behind them, and Moidart reaching up to the sky to the northeast. I look back at Mull and remember the lines of the poet Riven Todd, who stacked peat on the island during a summer in the 1930s, and who wrote about the hills crouching like lions against the Atlantic. These hills, this sea, these islands against the Atlantic, the various shades of blue fill the heart with feeling. I'm happy here. I'm happy that this place is as it is. I do not want to be anywhere else.
We're at the Mitchell Library. You can hear a little bit of the background here. And we're with Jeanette Harris from the Scottish Book Trust, who's been involved with the amazing book sculptures. Just for people who don't know, can you tell us a little bit about what book sculptures are?
Book sculptures have been created by an anonymous artist. To date, she has created 10. And then during Book Week Scotland, Scottish Book Trust has commissioned 5 new pieces, which we have had ferried around Scotland to 5 fantastic locations during this week.
You ferried one of them. You were, I believe, they called you a guardian.
That's correct. I was the guardian for a piece which went to Eriskay, which is one of the outer islands of the Western Isles. So I ferried that over from Edinburgh, a long journey of about 9 hours. And that was a piece of Whisky Galore. Eriskay was chosen because Whisky Galore's story was based on the island of Eriskay. So the clues were all based around whisky. Images of Eriskay were put on our website and people searched online for the clues. Then they found the clues, went on to select the next clue, and then people had to actually physically arrive at the destination where each of the sculptures was being held. So people turned up at Eriskay for the one which I was looking after. There was another one in Kirriemuir, which is the birthplace of J.M. Barrie. So we had a Peter Pan piece there. Then we had one at Alloway at the Burns Museum, which was Tam O'Shanter. And then we had another one at the Seabird Centre in North Berwick, which was Treasure Island.
Can you give us one or two of the clues from the Whisky Galore sculpture?
The first big clue for the Whisky Galore one was actually 12 letters. Each was the first letter of the name of a whisky. And each of those letters eventually spelt Whisky Galore.
Do you think now that having shepherded this piece of artwork, this amazing piece of artwork around, do you think maybe you'll have another career as somebody who ferries Picasso's? You know, this is a really important job. Actually, art has to move around, and they need people like you to do it. Do you think? Were you excited by the job?
I was absolutely delighted to go to Eriskay because it's such a beautiful location. I also know Scotland reasonably well, and it was fairly certain I wouldn't get lost. It was quite a long journey, but I was delighted to do it. My other job at Scottish Book Trust might just intervene, but perhaps there's a new career for me there as a curator of book sculptures. I would love to do it. It was a delightful thing to do. Eriskay was fantastic. The people there were so helpful, and the sculpture was claimed by the pupils of Eriskay Primary School, and their teacher, Katie MacDonald, claimed it on behalf of the school. They had to come to the local pub called the Politician Bar, which is also part of the Whisky Galore story, and they had to walk from the school 2 or 3 minutes down the road to the bar and walk in, and they had to claim it there by ordering a particular drink at the bar.
Oh, they could have gotten arrested.
They could have been in trouble, but their teacher claimed it on their behalf.
Were you there when that happened? Or
I was there, yes. That was part of the process, that we set everything up. The people who own the bar agreed to have the sculpture hosted there, and it is still there. They're keeping it there indefinitely for everyone who comes to Eriskay to go and see. There is only one bar on the island of Eriskay, so everyone goes in there. And the pupils at the school were also presented with a small trophy, also made out of a book sculpture as well. So that is their prize. And a similar piece was made for each of the winners of the 5 pieces.
And how excited were the kids? It must have been amazing to see their faces.
And the youngsters were absolutely delighted. They had been following all of the clues for all 5 in the whole week. So they were delighted when they discovered that one was coming to their island. And they came to claim it. They were utterly delightful children. They sang 2 songs in Gaelic for us, and we had a wonderful afternoon with them. We visited the school, brought some books for them. They were utterly delightful children, and they were very excited and pleased that we had brought something unusual and different to their school for the day and to their island.
Gemma Dornan, and I'm from Shannara.
you found one of the five book sculptures that were going around throughout Scotland. Can you tell us just a little bit about what the clue was that tipped you off as to where the sculpture was and what it felt like to find it?
The first clue was, my first is in such and such and my second is in the next word. And as soon as I knew it said Robert Burns, the first place that came to my head was the Robert Burns Birthplace Museum, which is in Alloway, so it's kind of on my way home and I see it quite a bit and I'd never been. And I thought, well, I might as well head there and just hope that the second clue leads there, because I'd never been, and I figured if I did go and it wasn't there, I'd at least visited the museum and it was somewhere that I'd wanted to go. So we did that and it was quite fun. So
how did you find it? When you walked in, did you say, look, I'm looking for the sculpture? Did you have to go and dig around? Did they yell at you? Did they say, ha ha, you found it?
No. We walked in and actually sat in the cafe for a while and studied the map of the place to figure out where it could possibly be. And then when I eventually got the text, it just said in the foyer. So we sort of raced to the foyer and I was like, I'm looking for a gatekeeper. And one of the girls was there and she was like, oh, could you tell me what the name of Robert Burns' father was? And I was like, William. And she was like, yeah. And
is that true? Did you know that?
Yeah. I sort of, before I headed down, I grabbed my Robert Burns book and was like, I'm going to learn some things. That was one of the things that stuck in my mind, so it was quite handy.
The Burns Museum will keep the sculpture, correct?
Yes.
And you do get a little trophy as well, right?
Yeah, I got this. It's a teacup on top of a plinth that's sit in a saucer, and it has the hand of the witch with the horse's tail poking out the side. It is the most amazing little thing ever. So I've got it in my bookcase, and it's in pride of place. So
when you were following the clues and things, what were you thinking? Did you think you'd ever actually manage to find one, or were you just kind of...
I just thought, well, actually, I was avoiding doing my dissertation. She's due very, very soon.
Which is on?
The Modern Renaissance of Scottish Literature. But no, I didn't think, actually. I just thought, well, at least I'll get to see a sculpture sort of in first person, because they are pretty amazing, and I've only ever seen pictures of them, so...
And that's great that you just drove down and just thought, we'll just check in. There it was.
We might as well. We'll see. We had a look around the museum as well, which is, I've never been, and I was really surprised actually at how pretty good the museum was. So I definitely need to go again.
Was anybody behind you just like, no?
Yeah.
Were there people?
There was a guy from Bear's Den. So he must have literally been behind us on the motorway, who came in after us, and he was like, oh, I've been pipped at the post. And I thought, oh dear. I actually felt a little bit guilty for a couple of seconds, but that passed.
Why did you feel
good? I don't know, I kind of felt like I cheated him out of it, but I was like, nope, I got here first. Like, yeah. Seriously,
that's
my sculpture now.
While we were at the Mitchell Library, among the other events that were happening there and all the excitement, there was a young writers conference in which young adults were learning about, you know, how to improve themselves as writers and people who wanted to break into publishing and things like that. One of the workshop leaders was Jennifer Williams. Can you tell us, Jennifer, what you're doing in this beautiful corner of the Mitchell Library?
I am working with 14 to 18-year-olds on something called Cut It Up Poetry. So we are taking beautiful books that I have collected from various bookshops in Edinburgh and committing book murder. We've learned the words libricide, book murder, and biblioclasm, book destruction. But we're cutting the books up and messing with them and gluing them back together into poems. So really, we're...
Oh, good. Let's hear some of the bits of poetry, because this is my favorite thing to do, because it's always so weird and random.
Long ago, the fox gone wild howls into the grave, where the ghastly black night swallows his golden laugh. A rust-red crow joyously rumors of a fine pleasure found in identifying only with himself. The fox laughs again, and a fragrant, fragile scorn is sent through the door, just like poetry. My Pacific love.
Oh, that's a great...
Isn't that Pacific.
I like this one. The snowbound garden, smoke winds and snowy embers, where sea and land meet. That's very nice.
I love this. I love the last line of this one, too. I am vacant, feeble, hungry, furiously eating the star, perpetually mad.
Oh, that's good. That's like a Joy Harjaro poem.
Amazing.
They don't mind it so much?
A proper kind of gasp from all the attendees when I told them that the one rule at the workshop was that they actually had to rip up and cut up the books. And they all went, because I think they're all people who really love books, and that was hard for them at first. But actually, it took about 2 seconds, and they were all like, and they started ripping them up and chopping them up. It was very interesting, because they were all very, very quiet at first, and then by the end of the workshop, they were all yammering away joyously. So I think it did help unlock some doors, and yeah, they've all made really beautiful poems now. So I hope they'll be using this technique again in future.
Madeline Thompson, Gemma Homewood.
What have you learned in the recent workshop? Anything interesting? Anything I could steal? Anything our audience should steal?
Cut up poetry. So it's how to make something that's your own out of something that's not your own. Fun how to do it, and you just got to cut up books and make a big mess of things.
Yeah. What did you? Were you surprised by what you came up with?
Yeah, because when you hear about it, you kind of think, yeah, well, how are you going to make it make sense? It'll just sound really weird and fragmented, but it doesn't. It actually works really well. And
oh, that's good. Can you tell us between the two of you, maybe because we've been collecting some top five lists, your top five books that made you want to write more?
There is a very, very little known book by a brilliant author called Catherine Webb called The Extraordinary and Unusual Adventures of Horatio Lyle, which is this mental Victoriana detective thing. And I'd wanted to write for a long time, but then when I read that, I thought that is what I want to do, because she's just got this brilliant style. And it's that kind of book that kind of works on levels, that it's kind of aimed at teen audiences, but it could work as an adult novel as well. So there's that kind of bridging of genres and bridging of age barriers that really interest me. Yeah.
How about you? What was one of the books that inspired you to get writing?
It was Eyes Like Stars by Lisa Manchev. It's part of a series, the Theatro Luminata series, and it's just fantasy and crazy, and it's amazing, the description and the characters. It's really good. It's about this girl who lives in the theatre, but the characters aren't actors. They're like the characters they play, and they perform every play in the world. And she hangs about with the four like mischievous fairies from Midsummer Night's Dream. And there's the sprite Ariel from The Tempest by Shakespeare. And there's Ophelia and all the Shakespeare stuff. And she uses quotes from Shakespeare in different plays. And it's really well put together, and I really enjoyed it.
Maybe another one from you, Gemma.
Completely opposite end of the spectrum, George R. R. Martin's A Song of Ice and Fire. It's a Game of Thrones, and it's basically this massive, massive saga, and frankly the author's going to die before he finishes it at the rate he's writing them. It's about these families in this fictional land of Westeros, and it's about these families and the struggle for power, and it's just so complex and so well put together, and I am in awe of how he manages to write them, because they're all like 600-700 pages.
How about you?
Probably The Scorpio Races by Maggie Stiefvater. So I don't know why, it's sort of gripping. You really want to read it. And it follows two people's stories, Puck Connolly and Sean Kendrick. Every November, the Kapalishka, the seahorses, come out onto land and they capture them. And they have the Scorpio Races. But the horses are like meat-eating predators. And they race them on the beaches. And it's Puck Connolly, her house is going to be sold, so she needs to enter the races, but she enters on her own land horse. And Sean Kendrick, who's running the races for years and won, and he needs it to buy the horse that he really wants, the Kapalishka that he really wants. So it's really good.
That sounds good. No spoilers in that, right?
No, there's not.
good. And one last one between the two of you. Do you think you're going to come to a consensus for the fifth book?
Harry Potter.
Harry Potter.
Cliche that we are.
I hope some people decide to check out those recommendations. That little-known Harry Potter book might be hard to find. And also at the Mitchell Library was Frank Culture Boyce. He was there talking about his Chitty Chitty Bang Bang series that for kids, but he's also an author of books for young adults. And of course, he scripted the opening ceremonies of the Olympics and has written the screenplay for 24-Hour Party People, Cock and Bull Story, Welcome to Sarajevo. He's an amazing screenwriter, and it was a real pleasure to get a chance to chat with him a little bit after his event. Here he is at the Mitchell Library. Frank, what are you doing here at Book Week Scotland?
I'm here specifically with the Chitty Chitty Bang Bang books, of which the second one's just been published. I just read and then let people ask questions, and people always ask really great questions.
What was today's greatest question?
Today's, let me think. Well, people were asking a lot about the Olympic Games. Well, I was the writer of the Olympic Games opening ceremony.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that. How does one write the opening ceremony? Is that are you sick of answering this question? I mean, that is an insane thing to have to do.
Yeah. I don't really know what it means to be the writer of the Olympic Games opening ceremony. Actually, do you know what? There's no point in me giving hints to people who want to write future Olympic ceremonies, is there? Because there aren't going to be that many people in the world to do it. So it was just a fantastic thing to have done once. But it's a completely non-transferable skill set.
It was such an amazing thing. And it must have been totally... Was it totally terrifying for you to have to do that?
No, I never got nervous about it, partly because I was working with Danny Boyle, who is very unflappable, and also cynically because it was always going to be Danny Boyle's opening ceremony, so if I cocked up, no one was going to know.
But you didn't. It was amazing, and I think everybody really enjoyed it. There seems to be a huge gap between, say, writing children's books and writing films like 24-Hour Party People, Cock and Bull Story, Welcome to Sarajevo. How do you reconcile those two different parts of yourself? Do you need to reconcile, or do you just do different things at different times based on how you're feeling?
Well, storytelling. And the strange thing about film is that, although film is very high-tech, for most of the life of a film, the writer is telling the story verbally, because you're pitching it and you're explaining it, you're talking it to people, and actually the film bit is right at the end, and actually I don't even often watch them all the way through. It's most of its life, it's a story that you're telling, you know, because you're bored of it by the time it's shot, you know, by the time it's edited together. Yeah. But most of its life you're telling the story, and with a children's book you write the children's book, it takes you years, but after that you spend a lot of time in schools reading bits out and reciting bits, so it's all talking, it's all telling stories.
I like that way of looking at it. Speaking of telling stories and talking, I mean, we've been putting together a kind of compilation of people's favorite top five books or things to read, and I don't think a lot of people read scripts as much as they could be. You know, I think it's not a done thing. Do you agree? I guess maybe in your world people are reading scripts a lot more.
I don't know, you know, because like, it's really hard to read a script. You know, if you can read a script and see a movie in your head, you should probably be a movie director. But especially, you know, most films, the dialogue isn't that important. It's really the order of events. And I think most people, it's quite a specialised talent being able to read a screenplay. And I kind of wouldn't push people to read screenplays a lot. But if you were going to read screenplays, I guess the kind of classic Hollywood ones would be worth reading, because they still really loved language then. We kind of lost that in movies a bit. But I would say The Apartment, which is an amazing script by Izzy Diamond, which is, I think, the most perfect screenplay ever written, and that's a beautiful read. It's amazing. It plays with language, and it's the shape of it is so gorgeous. And then maybe Notorious by Ben Hecht, which is again just perfect. Two perfect screenplays. So there you go.
Do you read the Chitty Bang Bang series? Do you practice that on your own children, or are they grown up?
Normally never ever read my own stuff to my own kids because I'm too nervous of it. But with Chitty, because I didn't feel that it belonged to me, it was like a beautiful car that had been lent to me. They really got on board with helping be the pit stop team and service it, and so they've read every draft and they've got loads of it felt like a team effort.
That's strange that you feel too nervous to read your own other stories to your children.
They get attached to bits, and then you've cut them, and it's like, oh, and they kind of are really unhappy with the book then because you cut their favourite bits.
As you know, there were events happening throughout Scotland. We got a chance to go up to Dundee and speak with the director of the DCA, who told us a bit about all the exciting events they were doing there.
Okay, my name's Clive Gilman, and I'm the director of Dundee Contemporary Arts. We've been doing a number of things over the last week as part of Book Week Scotland. Some of them have been really going off at different tangents. So we've been actually looking at the way in which we work with visual arts and the way that responds to the idea of the book. We've been running a project which is creating a book that is a modern version of the Book of Hours. We've called it the Book of 100 Hours, and that we're working with a whole bunch of people who are looking at the ways in which they can define their time and articulate their time through something that is an equivalent of the medieval Book of Hours. But we've also been looking at things from quite a lot of different directions. We had one evening where we had a live dance performance that was referencing the narratives of 9/11, and we followed that up with a discussion about the particular authored narratives, fictional narratives, that have come out since 9/11 about that event, and the way in which writers and visual artists have responded to that event and the differences between them. We also had a performance by somebody who's actually featured in the book that's released as part of Book Week Scotland, Aidan Moffat, performing some of his works, which, although I guess they're coming from a pop music tradition and that they're kind of 3-minute pieces, effectively they're kind of poetic. They are kind of short pieces of prose which are actually set against music, and that was a really interesting evening. Tonight we've had a discussion where we've been focusing on ideas of transmediation, so the ways in which visual artists might produce or use text, and the way in which people who work with writing disciplines might work to either respond to or even generate things that might be considered to be visual arts objects. And talking about the tensions within that, how one can cross disciplines. Some of the things I haven't mentioned is that we've also got some gallery-based exhibitions where we're showing books made by artists, and we're also showing some works that are referenced in a new book that's come out about a particular form of artist practice. So they're quite close to what we might do normally. What we've done around Book Week Scotland is kind of bring together a number of different elements that might take place in our programme over a period of time and actually all harness them to this idea of the book, which has been quite cute for us, and I think we quite enjoyed thinking about how we might do that.
Some great things happened at the DCA and continue to happen all the time at the DCA. If you get a chance to go to Dundee, if you're in Dundee, make sure to support it and go and check out the space. It's beautiful, and they're always making interesting things happen, as I think you just heard. Meanwhile, in Edinburgh, Brian Holton did an event at the Scottish Storytelling Centre. Brian's an amazing translator and well-renowned for his translations of Chinese into English and Scots. And he's going to read to us one poem that he translated into Scots language, which we hope you enjoy.
I'm going to begin this evening with some poems by the great poet Du Fu, one of the great 8th century Tang Dynasty poets. And he's sort of like, for range and depth and complexity, and also for craftsmanship, he's like Shakespeare. But he's also like Beethoven. You know, he had a terrible life. He was gentry, but he was forever poor. And, you know, he was cut off from his family for years on end. And his poems are as complex as like a Beethoven late quartet, but they're like sort of little sad jokes. And I always loved his work, but it's only quite recently that I've found a voice for him. This set of poems was commended in this year's Times Stephen Spender Poetry Translation Prize, which was great. I think it's the first time they've actually recognised the Scots tongue. So I was delighted by that. I didn't get the chance to go on stage in my kilt, unfortunately, but, you know. Okay, so what I want to do, because one of the things I'm doing is trying to structure these poems kind of like the Chinese is. And the Chinese line is, in this case, it's a five-syllable line with a 1-2, 1-2-3. So what I'm trying to do is stresses, 2 stresses, pause, 3 stresses. You know, you can't rhyme. Chinese rhymes very, very easily. But I'm trying to get something like that shape. So just to give you an idea, I'm going to read the first one. It's only 20 syllables. And reading it, of course, in modern pronunciation, which is the convention. We're not that sure how Du Fu would have sounded it himself. But this is in Mandarin. It sounds like this. Nong wu cun cun ji, chun liu an an shen, qian kun wan li yan, shi xu bai nian xin, mao wu hai kun fu, tao yuan zi ke xun, jian nan mei sheng li, piao bo dao ru jin. See that rhythm? 1-2, 1-2-3. And it's called in Scots Spring Sun on the Waterside Clachan. Now, the water, with a capital, is the Yangtze River, which in Chinese is the Lang Water. And this is a poem of exile. Fe tun te tun, folk ident at the hearst. Fe bank te bank, the water deep and spate. Gin I could see the lang miles of heaven and earth, I'd see but the turning years of all my days. My thicket roof was worth a pickle poems, though in my heart it was Chirnanog I socht aye. Cark and care, they smoored the line of my life, with a lang and weary stravague to win here the new.
And last but not least, for this Book Week Scotland podcast, we got a chance to speak to somebody who's been to many of the events across the country. Here she is.
My name is Nicola Balkind, and I'm the official Book Week blogger.
And what have you been doing as a blogger? You've been going and attending some of the events that have been happening around the country.
In Stirling, I went to see Anita Govan, who's the macker, and Jenny Erdl, who was with the Stirling Book Club talking about her book, which is called The Missing Shade of Blue, which she insists came before The 50 Shades of Grey. She made a point of saying that. And yeah, it was great. Everyone was really enthusiastic, and there was lots of good questions flying around. There's also a reading from some of the members of the public who'd contributed to my favourite place. So there's a guy called Glenn Merrilies who is absolutely hilarious. So I recommend you have a read of his piece in My Favourite Place.
That is that. How do you get a copy of the My Favourite Place book?
It's around all over the place. It's in, I think it's in Specsavers. It's on some of the Colmac ferries. It's in pretty much every library you can think of in Scotland. So I recommend you pick it up if you see it lying around somewhere. It's absolutely free. And it has a pretty pink spine, so you can't miss it.
Oh, that's great. And where is one of your favourite places as you've been travelling?
I really enjoyed Dundee. I hadn't spent much time there before. So I went to the Ardler Library there and saw an event about Viking Gold, which is a book, unsurprisingly, about Vikings. And some of the school kids were getting very enthusiastic about swords and hedge choppings and all that sort of thing, as well as words in general.
Do you get enthusiastic about swords and hedge chopping?
Not particularly, but I did enjoy her kind of workshop on writing that she began with before they got distracted with axes and the like.
Sounds really exciting. Where else did you go? So you went to Dundee, Stirling, and...
I went to Wishaw.
What happened? What was happening in Wishaw?
They had a Dickens debate, which was based around Oliver Twist, Please Sir, I Want Some More. And it mostly got into kind of societal politics and talking about how, I guess, the working classes should ask for more. We should help people in poverty and that sort of thing. I think they were a little bit concerned that it was going to go off the rails into something a bit more extreme, but it kind of kept around the literary format as well. There was a lot of chat about Dickens and kind of comparing the societies of his time to now. So yeah, it was really enlightening.
Was there anything that surprised you about the events that you were attending?
Speaking to people, they've mentioned so many other events that they've been to, all the other events that those places are running. It's been absolutely massive, and I think that everybody's got like a real enthusiasm for reading and for libraries and books, and it's been really great just to like really think about reading and the time that I spend reading, and you know, just even literary events that go on around Scotland throughout the year that I kind of look at and don't necessarily go along to. And now I'm a lot more energised to actually get up and go out and go and talk about books with people.
Thank you so much for doing all the good work in terms of the blogs and stuff. And they're still online, right? Where can people find them?
You can find them on the Scottish Book Trust website, all on there in the Book Week section. So have a look.
Remember to check out the Scottish Book Trust website at scottishbooktrust.com. You can like us on Facebook. Just look for Scottish Book Trust and click like. And you can follow us on Twitter at ScottishBKTrust. We hope you enjoyed our small taste of Book Week Scotland. We hope you got out there and participated in it in some way. We want to thank the Scottish Book Trust and everybody who was working to make this incredible event happen. It was huge. It is huge. Let's get into a book. Thanks so much for listening, and we'll see you soon. Bookmarked is produced by Colin Fraser with music from Ragland.